I'm wrestling, not weak for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 70 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defend What You Have Built and Dahlemer Mats. Tommy, we don't have a plan, but I don't care. We're going to kill this show because we got the U.S. Open to talk about. Where do you want to start?
We're also going to kill this show because we're killers.
That too. I actually had I was a speaker last night at it was a Division III college. It was at All Athletic Champions Banquet, you know, and I spoke. Uh-huh. It went fairly well, but the track coach, he used his terminology of monsters. He's like, and he said, you know, there's good athletes, but there's just these certain kids who just get everything out of themselves that they can, and those kids I call monsters.
I thought that was great
terminology.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to be monsters tonight. Tommy, I hate to start the show like this, and I literally just ran my high school.
Here we go. Ben's going to bag on the UWW.
You're goddamn right I am. I just got done with my practice, and in the end, we're like, hey, we got Freestyle State this week. Let's talk about some rules. Talking about all this stuff. And literally, like, three of the kids are like, why do they change the rules every year? And I'm like, for God's sakes, if I knew that, I would tell you. There is no logic.
Did you ask them, are we soulmates?
But seriously, Tommy, you know, and it's when people push for collegiate wrestling to go to freestyle, I always say, why? They're going to change the rules every single year. Like, there's no logic. There's no reasoning. These rules they have, the new ones they made up, are just god-awful. What are they doing?
It was disappointing. I mean, it really was.
No, let's pretend, Tommy. Let's pretend for a minute that you work for the UWW. Please reason this one out for me. What they're doing with these rules? Give me some kind of logic.
I can't.
Come on, you work for the UWW. This is your job. You have to tell me.
I can give you a good-hearted assumption that they're just trying to do what they think is best. And they're wrong, but they're trying. I don't know.
But in what logic is changing the rules every single year best for the sport? I mean, there's no – you know, I was thinking about that, like, well, we have to talk about the rules. I'm like, why do we have to talk about the rules? I want to talk about the wrestling and the wrestlers. But it's like it comes to such a head, and it's at such the forefront when it's something new literally every year it's something new.
I know. It really is like two kids – playing in the backyard, they're playing like home run derby. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And then every 30 minutes, they're like they change the rules up. Like, well, we're gonna move left field back, and we're doing four outs this time. And you know, we're gonna make sure you can't use that bat. You got to use the other bat. You know, and that's what it feels like.
That
right
is
now.
What it feels like.
It's still home run derby, but it's different every time.
But I mean, if we just take the Oliver Rutherford match, for example, the rules picked the winner there. He got the caution two for the hands of the face, which was applied very arbitrarily because you could say no one put the hands of the face more than Burroughs did in the finals, and he didn't get called. And then you got the correct throw, which is like, I just think such a stupid rule. I actually did do a Twitter poll, Tommy, and I got 1,100 votes on my Twitter poll. And 93% of my following said it is an absolutely ridiculous rule.
The correct throw?
Yes.
It's absolutely a ridiculous rule. It's, you know, it's just tough because, you know, any one of these rules, I would say, with the exception of the correct throw and criteria, no overtime, just doing it based on criteria. I said, other than those two rules, the rest of them I could live with.
What about the arbitrary caution and two that they're throwing out? This happened in a lot of matches. I mean, it's like hands in the face, grabbing the fingers, sometimes just for no freaking reason at all, caution and two. I mean, that's the same value as a takedown.
Yeah, that's bad too. I mean, I don't even know how to assess it all.
I mean, really, if you look deeper into it, and I think I brought this up when we first read these rules on the show, but it's like, if you want to make a way that the ref can control the outcome of the match, these are the rules to do it.
Yep.
I mean, just being able to throw caution in two for no reason, that's a lot of points. I mean,
it's tough, man. It's tough. And then even as tough as it is, it's even tougher when they're being introduced now. Everyone's reacting the way they should, because I think even if we get used to them, we won't agree with them. But we're not even assimilated to the rule changes. You got high school kids telling their freaking expert wrestling academy instructor, you know, why are they changing the rules? It's just the changes, and it's just hard to buy into. I would say conceptually, Ben, that freestyle wrestling is more exciting than folk style to me. But the governing bodies, the people that manage the sport of folk style wrestling, are infinitely better than the people that are managing the sport at the freestyle level. So sure. That's why.
Sure, I can get along with that assessment.
Because I think if, you know, the exposure points, the being rewarded for moving a guy around all over the place, you know, the way that freestyle is done, I mean, I think theoretically it can be more exciting.
I agree 100%. All right, let's get off the rules. They're going to come back up as we go through these brackets. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the rules are going to come back up. I mean, even when we start with 57 kilos, it's like you don't like the fact that there's no tiebreaker. I agree with that assessment. Tony Ramos wins by tie in both the quarters and the semis. Wins by tie. How does that sound?
It sounds like the heavyweight weight class or something.
Wins by tie.
Yeah, no, that was a good weekend for him. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, hey, he was in Vegas. He should have went to the tables, too.
Yeah, and you know, I believe this was the – I think this is how he beat – I think this is how he beat Nato. I hope I'm thinking about the right match. I watched a whole lot of these matches, so I might be getting confused in my head. I hope not. But I saw this happen numerous times this weekend. So the guy gets put on the clock, right? So we actually have numerous ways to penalize defensive wrestlers now. We have the push out, we have the shot clock, and then we just have the random caution and twos whenever they feel like it. But numerous times when the one wrestler has got put on the shot clock, obviously they kind of get over-aggressive because they don't want to give up the 1 point, you know? Right? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then they end up giving up a point and a push out because they get out of position because they're over aggressive. Was that the Ramos Tomasello? That's the I'm thinking of the right match, aren't I?
Yeah, I think you are. And I don't know if it's
It was.
Did you hear? And I don't know if I understood Ramos right, but did you hear that they're practicing when his opponent's on the shot clock and his time runs out? Then Ramos shoots because they feel like he's going to relax.
I did not hear him say that. What was that, an interview or something?
Yeah, I want to rewatch it because I was kind of listening to my kids talk to me at the same time I was watching the video.
Yeah,
but I think Ramos alluded to the fact that when his opponent is on the shot clock, okay.
Well, that's kind of what he did against Tomasello.
Right.
Right. I mean, he got the one and the one.
Yeah. So and then when the 30 seconds ends, then Ramos, you know, basically takes advantage of the guy letting up because it's like, oh man, I just gave up a point. I didn't you know do well on the shot clock, and then they go after him, which is that's I didn't see Tomasello.
Good thought process.
What's that?
That was a good thought process there.
It's actually a good strategy, right?
It is a good strategy.
So did you just compliment Ramos?
Damn it all.
That's not your style, dude.
Oh man, I don't really like him, but he did win another U.S. Open somehow. Some way, he got it done. It wasn't pretty. He had to come back in all quarters, semis, and finals. He had to come back in. Right. Now he gets to sit out. So I think there's probably a very good chance he makes the world team, because with that with that sitting out bonus, that helps a lot, obviously. You know, Deshaun looked really good up until the finals. He tacked Missouri's own Ellen Waters, unfortunately. Beat Zach Sanders fairly handily. I guess he had the lead on Ramos until, what, the last minute or so of the match?
Yes, he did. Yep.
So, yeah. So, you know, I guess he's probably the number one challenger. I can't really foresee anyone else coming out and really, obviously, not only do they have to win, but they have to get through the mini tournament, and then they have to beat Tony 2 out of 3. I couldn't really foresee anyone else doing that.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, Tomasello gave him the toughest match.
I mean, that's not true.
I know.
Pirelli was winning with 4 seconds left before he got taken down.
I was being a Buckeye homer.
Oh, okay.
Well, you got Graf and Gilman that's probably coming in the fold at the trial. That'll
oh,
even...
Graf is coming back, isn't he?
But if you think about it, it's like, oh, that makes it tougher. It's like, not for Ramos. It makes whoever wins the mini tournament more tired, because the weight class just got deeper. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a damn tough mini tournament, right? When you include all those people.
Yep. You ADDing on me, bro? What are you doing?
Yeah, I am. I apologize. I'm gonna get my head back in the game. I said I was gonna bring it. I got a text message. Actually, well, this could apply to the podcast. I just got a text message from my high school coach who also works at the academy. And he said that he was watching a Pico interview. And Pico says not only is he going to go and win an MMA belt, but after that he's going to go be a boxing champ too. He said he already spars with Pico said this in an interview, that he already spars with high-level boxers and does it very well.
How old is Pico, 19 or 18?
No, he's older than that. 2021?
Jeez, it's his first year out of high school, Ben.
I know, but he was super old. He did both years of cadets before he got to high school.
Gotcha.
He was abnormally old, which I was counting against him, but then obviously when he was a sophomore in high school, he started wrestling senior-level men and doing well. Yep. Then there's really nothing to say. Let's see. He was born in 96, so he'll be 21 this year.
Holy smokes. I was 19 as a redshirt freshman in the NCAA finals.
Yeah, and he would have been 20 going on 21.
He was 20 in high school.
Without redshirting.
He turned 20 in high school.
Let's see. He would have been – no, September of 2016, he would have still been in high – no. When did he finish high school? He graduated in April of 2016, so he would have been 19 going on 20 when he finished high school.
Jeez. Jeez.
Yeah, that's old. You could count that against him if he's wrestling high school competition, but when he's wrestling senior men, I don't know that you can count it against him.
No, you can't. You really can't.
I don't know if you follow MMA that much. Do you follow
MMA? I do. You're getting ready for a fight, man.
I am, but I don't want to talk about myself. I want to talk about Pico.
You're my podcasting brother. I'm fighting with you in spirit.
You know, it's airing on flowcombat.com, so you can tune in and watch it.
That's awesome. I am going to watch. I didn't know that until you just told
me. You can tell your whole office or something. Hey, everyone, we get a break now. You get to come watch.
I'm in. We'll do.
Yes, but Pico, so most, especially in Bellator, most young guys, they get like really easy opponents to start out with.
Right.
Even there's this guy, Michael Page, who he's a dummy, but he's like 12-0. Something, and they keep giving him like really easy people. I think he's in his 13th fight, and he finally has like a tough guy. But they've given him all easy people so far,
right?
And Pico, he's 0-0. He's never had a professional mixed martial arts fight, and he's coming out and he's fighting a guy who's 8-2, and he's a pretty solid regional level champion right out of the bat.
Right.
There's no cupcakes for him. He said, "Bring the freaking heat."
I like it.
I loved it. I was like, "That's freaking
and
awesome."
I would consider Pico to be heavily favored, wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah, definitely.
Not on paper, but just, you know, you kind of know.
Yeah, this is the kind of fight that you can bet on and win a lot of money, because it probably will have good odds favoring the other guy. I mean, I remember I won so much money betting on Daniel Cormier when he was, you know.
Yeah.
Because you knew he was going to win, and yeah. But the fighting people didn't know that yet, you know, so they were all betting against him.
They didn't. And Cormier's perfect because we all know how good he is, and we all predicted this, but, like, from an eyeball test, he's not, you know, as impressive as a lot of other people are, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. And the other thing that made it so easy to bet on him is he's intelligent, right? So it's like why people are like betting on me. I'm not going to go out and try to freaking throw bombs. I'm just going to do what I do well. I'm going to go take him down and beat his ass. And that was what Daniel did. It was so easy to make money on him. So hopefully this Pico line comes out and he's the underdog. That would be fantastic.
That would be great. Let's throw all of our podcast earnings on the line.
double it. There we go. Boom. So that was why I got distracted, because I read that and I'm like, what? Is he serious about this? So Pico, that's he's on the NYC card on, and which we have other wrestlers on. Chael Sonnen's on that. Michael Chandler's on that. And I hope I'm not forgetting anyone else. All right. Sorry. I got distracted. Back to the U.S. Open. 61 kilos. Another Buckeye in the mix that just – he just tossed the bracket in disarray. JDJ, where is he even training at? I had no idea.
He's training at the Julius Mitch Trained Wrestling Academy.
What's that?
I don't know. He's volunteer wrestling coach at Kent State, okay. I think, and runs his own academy with Ty Mitch.
Where did Ty Mitch wrestle?
Ty Mitch was actually very good coming out of high school, and was at Virginia Tech, and for whatever reason didn't finish out there, but well known in Ohio. A couple times state champion. He won Fargo, I think, once or twice. So him and Johnny grew up together, so they run in the camp.
I got you. I mean, honestly, and he's a guy who I would have said his style doesn't translate worth a damn to freestyle, right? Because he's mostly like
I would say that. I would say that even now.
Well, he made it work against Ness. I mean, Ness is damn good.
I'm saying that his style is not any different just because he beat Ness.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And then the other thing here is, Tommy, I was trying to think back through history. So Brandon Wright makes the finals. Brandon Wright, I looked up his profile. He hasn't placed in anything. I remember recruiting him out of high school. He's from Indiana. And then to my knowledge, He definitely never went D1. I think he went JUCO and then maybe NAIA or something. Right. Has a guy ever been ranked this low, made the U.S. Open Finals?
I think, you know, it's probably the most journeyman U.S. Open Final I've ever heard of, because where's he even training, Ben?
I have no idea, Tommy. And I looked up, like, you know, on Track Wrestling, you can look through their histories and stuff. And I mean, he DNP'd at like a regional, you know, like a Northern Plains regional, a couple times. He had a bunch of DMPs. I want to say he never placed at an open before this, and there's a whole bunch of regionals he didn't place at. So he never has had that much success. It wasn't like one of these small college guys who has a lot of success, you know, like a Travell or who's another one besides Travell is a great example. But yeah, just totally out of nowhere.
This is more out of nowhere, because there's been so many unsung guys that come from D2 out of nowhere and they get put in a good and training environment, or maybe even it's not even good, but you can kind of see it before the tournament happens. I mean, you and I aren't as plugged into the underground, but I mean,
I don't know. I feel like I follow wrestling pretty damn well.
I feel like he would have done well at some tournaments recently, or he's training at the Ohio RTC, or he's training at Nittany Lion Club, so on and so forth. And it just was out of nowhere. So it's pretty much an anomaly, if you ask me.
So you can't recall any time in your history that's happened?
No, I can't. I cannot.
All right, let me look him up. So here's what so he did place at the Last Chance qualifier, took fourth. But prior to that, DMP at the Nationals, DMP at the Northern Plains, DMP at the Nationals, DMP at the Northern Plains, DMP at the World Team Trials Challenge Tournament. He took second at the Northern Plains, and he DNP'd at Last Chance Qualifier. I mean, that is not the resume of a U.S. Open finalist.
No, it's not. Yeah, we don't even know where he wrestled after high school. We're not even exactly sure.
I'm trying to look it up, but these are all obviously on this profile. There's only freestyle tournaments. Hold on, maybe I got another one. Okay, DNP'd it to Bill Farrell. Oh, he did take second at the University Nationals in 2013. So that was let's see, who did he lost in the finals to Sam Sherlock, which I don't even remember who Sam Sherlock is.
I don't know who that is either.
He beat Matt Rappo and Mike Labry in the quarters and the semis. Again, I don't know who that is either.
Just goes to show you how old we're getting, Ben.
No, bullshit. I follow wrestling, Tommy. It goes to show you that this is an anomaly.
I knew you would resent that comment.
Well, I am getting old, but I still follow wrestling. I mean, right. I used to be like obsessive, and I would know every single person's statistics, and I don't know that anymore. But, I mean, if you went through these Flow Arena brackets, I could tell you a good something about most of the guys in the bracket. You know,
right.
Besides there's some really random, just like, you know, there's like, for example, there's a local wrestling coach who's an assistant wrestling coach that entered the U.S. Open at heavyweight. Why he did it, I'm not sure, but you know, he lost 10-0.
Right.
So besides that, I feel like I could tell you something about almost everyone in this bracket. All right, well, Kendrick Maple wins it, but obviously there's no Logan Stieber here.
He's
going to be sitting out to the finals.
He's wrestling in Pan Ams next week. He's busy. He's training. Wrestled in the World Cup. Had the World Championships in December. He'll be ready.
Oh, hey, so let's talk about this. Now that you said that, they talked about this on FRL, and I think this is a valid point, something that USA Wrestling is going to have to figure out. So first and foremost, I do think UWW listens to our show because they pretty much stole my idea point blank. I meant to look back at which episode it was that I said this on so I could reference our listeners to that. I'm going to try to look at it now.
You should just listen to all of our episodes until you stumble on.
There you go. I mean, that would be ideal. Listen to every single one of our episodes. So at one point I said something great that the UWW do is if they actually created a season where you had mandatory tournaments that you had to go to in order to get seeding criteria at the World Championships, right?
Right.
And so this is the first year they're doing it, and they're only doing it with two tournaments. They're doing it with the Continentals and then the Worlds, but they're supposed to expand to four tournaments next year.
Which I like.
Which is what I mean, point blank, literally exactly what I said. So, UWW, keep listening, keep stealing my ideas, and if while you're stealing them, throw out some of these stupid-ass rules that you made. Okay, but so then they made the point that if the Pan Ams are always in May, April or May, and we don't know who our team is until June, that's going to hurt in seeding criteria because it doesn't go with the weight, the seeding points, Tommy. It goes with the person. So if Logan Stieber scores the qualification points, the seeding points for the World Championships at the Pan Ams, then he does not, and he doesn't make the team, USA doesn't get those points. They're just gone.
Right.
So they're encouraging people to wrestle their number ones, which is a good thing in my opinion. But how does the U.S. figure that out? Because they would totally have to change the way they do their system in order to get the for sure number one guy at the Pan Ams.
How would they need to change the system as long as it's not on the same weekend?
Well, because they don't know who the number one guy is till June. The World Team Trials aren't till June 10th, and the Pan Ams are usually early May or late April.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I was thinking if you are the number one guy going into it. But, yeah, it's – but how many
– I mean, you could make a good guess at who the number one or two is, but you can't be for sure.
A lot of countries have that same dilemma. Russia would have the same dilemma.
Sure.
They decide their team after the European Championships.
Okay, but that doesn't negate the fact that this is what UWW said they're going to do, and it's actually a good idea. They don't have a lot of them, but this is a good one. So how do we cope with that?
I would say that we don't need to change the seasonality of how we decide our team to accommodate the seeding yet. I think we need to just –
why not? Being a good seed at Worlds could be a huge advantage.
It could be a huge advantage, but also making the team in December and putting guys on different calendars on how we decide our world team and how that impacts, you know, our entire system, I think is a greater risk than getting guaranteeing that our number one guys are the ones that are, you know, because, you know, half of these guys going to the Pan Ams, maybe not half, but how many guys do we – who's going to the Pan Ams? You know what we should do, Ben?
What?
Take note on the eight guys we're sending to Pan Ams and see how many of them make the team.
Well, it's not that many, I'll tell you that much. Because I don't think Taylor's going. Let me see. Damn it. The FRL went through this. U.S. Greco team, U.S. women's team. Where's the damn men's team?
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that I would not change the seasonality of how we make our team based on the UWW who changes like the wind until we get
that's fair.
Concrete data and stuff like that on what the impact of all this is. But it is a good conversation, no doubt.
How do I find the freaking freestyle team? All right, I'm going to type it in again. Hold on. U.S. freestyle roster 2017 Pan Ams. All right, hold on. Let's go. Freestyle men announced for Pan Ams. I got it. Okay, here we go. It is Graf, Stieber, Russell, Green, Rochelle, Dean, Snyder, Bradley. So Graf, probably not. Stieber, okay, he'll make it. Russell, highly unlikely. Green, probably. Kyle Rochelle, definitely not. And I didn't even know he was still an active competitor, actually. He coaches here at Wisconsin. Gabe Dean, not. Snyder, yes. And Don Bradley, unlikely.
So three of those eight are favored to make the team.
Yes. Only three. It's not very good.
Right. Now, is there any other way you can be seeded besides the Continental Championships?
So you get points for the Continentals and the previous World Championships. And like I said, they're saying they're going to expand it to four tournaments. But right now, it's only those two.
Right. So we have – yeah, so it's not terrible. It's just – we need to keep an eye on it. I'm with you. I follow it.
I agree because, you know, we don't have to really make our final decision right now. And obviously, the Olympics is the most important one. So,
right.
Okay. So let's go on. Kendrick Mabel, good job. He's at Purdue now training. All right, 65 kg. These brackets seem kind of weak to me, but we have to remember every post-Olympic year, so 1 year after the Olympics, a lot of people drop off. That's just what happens.
I agree. It's just that there's a shuffle. There's retirements. There's guys that you don't think – you don't know are tough. Then the next year you finally admit that they are because they're coming onto the scene very recently, you know. So all these things going on. And in the post-Olympic year is the weakest year, just the way it is. But, you know, Jordan Oliver is freaking good.
No, stop. Let's talk about a semi before you say Jordan Oliver's good.
Okay.
Did you watch a semi, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I did.
The most controversial match of the tournament. So Rutherford gets, I believe, three pushouts or three pushouts in a shot clock.
It was the quarterfinal, wasn't it, Tom?
It was semi.
Okay, yeah, I watched it.
Okay, so he gets two pushouts in a shot clock, I believe, is what he got. So in the second period, Oliver doesn't actually score any real points in this match. So in the second period, Rutherford gets a hand to the face, caution two, right? Which it wasn't bad. I mean, was he putting the hands on the face? Sure, but nothing that I would have said anything about, right? Right. I also Twitter polled, do people feel like there's an issue with hands to the face? And 76% said no, there is not.
Well, let me tell you something there, Ben.
Yeah,
I would say domestically, there's not, although you could make a case for Burroughs having too much hands in the face.
Yeah.
But internationally, it is a problem.
You think so?
Yes. I feel very strongly about that.
Really?
Yeah, hands to the face and finger locking overseas is rampant.
Really? And, well, finger locking, yes, but I didn't think hands to the face was that bad.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, these dudes are putting their thumbs in your eyeballs and all kinds of stuff.
Donnie Pritzloff was the king of that. He poked me in the eye so many times, that son of a gun. I swear to God, the first time I wrestled in the U.S. Open, I couldn't see. I defaulted my last match. I, I have almost never defaulted a match in my life, and yep. I couldn't see out of my eye.
Wow.
So I didn't default. Yeah. Every time.
Yeah, but anyways, I know I took some of the thunder away, but I think domestically, you know.
Okay. Well, if you say so, I mean.
Definitely finger locking, and then I think hands to the face as well is okay. A problem overseas.
You should go back and watch the Rutherford Oliver hands to the face.
No, it wasn't a problem in that match.
Well, it wasn't a problem. So he shouldn't have got caution in two.
No, I agree. I'm just talking about the rule in general. Overseas, it's an issue. It's okay. A distraction. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I don't think that Rutherford had too many hands to the face.
Okay. So that was unnecessary 2 points. Then Rutherford gets in on a single leg with not very much time left. I don't know. We'll say 10. He had a freaking beautiful down block, disappear the leg, go behind. And he's in on the legs with short time. And Oliver obviously understands, hey, I don't have any time left. I just have to try to throw him, right, rather than let him just stand here with my leg. So he tries to throw him, at which point it's unsuccessful. Rutherford stays on top. Oliver goes to his back. Rutherford flips over the top and moves away, right, because he's winning. Why stay in contact? And the refs go, caution. I'm not sorry, caution. Correct throw, 2 points for Oliver.
So we might get an argument here.
Oh, okay? Let's do this.
Because
I'm waiting to argue with you.
Here's the thing, Ben. We both agree that the rule is terrible, right?
Terrible.
But if the rule exists, that was a correct throw.
But why do you get to go to your back with no? I mean, right?
I mean, I don't know.
He went flat to his back. Rutherford's on a single, like he went flat to his back. How does that not give up points? There's also that auto-touche rule where if you ever go flat to your back, it's 2 points, and he sure as shit was flat on his back.
I think that it is a terrible, absolutely terrible rule.
Okay.
Terrible rule.
Yeah, you want to give the correct throw, too, how do you not give Rutherford any points?
Well, I was in a text group on this, and there's a couple guys that thought Rutherford should have got points, but there was more guys than not that said it was in a normal universe. It's a 0-0 call, and the match ends, and Rutherford is a winner.
But here's the thing, Tommy. So let's
some talk guys. First. Some guys thought it could have been 4 Rutherford, nothing Oliver, and then obviously ridiculous rule. In my opinion, when you looked at those examples the UWW sent out, they were worse examples of the correct throw than the one we saw with Rutherford. I thought the Rutherford example of the is I'm sorry, the Oliver example is a correct throw.
Okay.
Now, I hate the rule. Sure. I think it's ridiculous, but I thought that was a correct throw.
Okay, but so let's look at it this way. It's essentially a bailout, right? Because Rutherford is on his leg. There's 8 seconds left. 8 seconds. He says, what can I do? I got to try to throw him from here. I have nowhere else, absolutely nowhere else to go. So because Rutherford put him in that situation, because he got to that single leg, and he forced Oliver to have only one direction to go, which was to his back, right? And then he does not get exposed or taken down. He should get points for that.
This is a serious question, Ben.
Yes.
Is there any part of the description of the correct throw that says if the other guy is attacking, then he should be given some leeway? So I guess I don't know this, but if the description and the rules of the correct throw is in a vacuum, if you attempt something that coulda, shoulda, woulda scored, and it's a valiant attempt.
Wait, coulda, shoulda, woulda, it just means you attempted.
Right. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what point in the match it was. It doesn't matter that Rutherford was the attacking guy. It doesn't matter that Oliver was desperate and he was about to lose. I mean, I'm talking about the rules. I'm not talking about my opinion.
Sure, but doesn't it have any value that he went to his back without putting the other man on his back, without taking the other man down?
I gotta watch it again, Ben. But here's the deal: is it right on flow? I gotta watch it.
Flow.
I just obviously didn't think it should have been points for Oliver if it weren't for the stupid rule. Where the heck is it?
I'm on Flow Arena, so obviously you can play them off of there.
Yeah, I'll do that.
But so in that situation, if the correct throw rule does not exist, right, then 100% Rutherford is getting some type of points.
I don't know about that.
Why not? I mean, at worst case, it's 2 points for a defensive maneuver where you stop them on their back, right? Like if someone tries to throw you and you stop them on their back, you get 2 points instead of four because it's a defensive maneuver. You know what I'm saying?
I want to watch it again because I don't know that my reaction was not that Rutherford. Oh, shoot. I got to mute it.
It's all good.
I got an amateur podcast. You know, hey, it's just our podcast. I just don't. I don't remember thinking that Rutherford got hosed out of points.
Really? Obviously the fact that whatchamacallit got 2 points for that. I didn't. You know, I just don't think you should be able to go to your back with no retribution. That's what I think.
Well, I mean I'm
there's exposure
that.
There, right? There has to be points.
Okay, hold on a second. Anyways, let's keep going. We're okay. Around it
now. Oliver Molinaro, 4-4 finals. Oliver wins because he has two twos. Molinaro has two ones and a two. Is that good? I think this is another situation where there was
I'm watching this. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Yeah, wait. Dude. I don't think Rutherford deserved to have points. Now, this is a multifaceted argument. There is nothing. So, as it relates to Rutherford deserving points, he had a lifted single. Yes. The action was exclusively Oliver's action, exclusively, because they were at a stalemate, standstill position in the single leg.
Okay.
Oliver chose to go to his back.
Okay.
And rolled all the way through. It'd be like a slip throw.
Slip throws don't exist in freestyle, do they? I thought it was only Greco.
I'm saying if there was a slip throw, I'm saying it's it was like if he it was like if Oliver threw Rutherford off the mat. You got to watch that again. You're telling me that Rutherford should have points, and then you know it was a correct throw.
Well, I just don't see like it would be like for me. Here's what I think, Tommy. It would be like. You're on a single or double leg on me, and I leg pass you to get out of trouble. Am I giving up points for that? You're damn right they're calling me for two. I had that happen. I did that against Lee Fullhart like an idiot in 2005.
What it reminds me of is
hey,
like
– I go to my back on my own volition to pass the leg. Can I do that?
Well, okay. So, no, you can't, but here's
okay,
the thing.
Okay, so well, what's the difference?
You're using a bad example. You're probably going to call my example a bad example, but I think it's the equivalent of trying a gut wrench on top. You know how you expose your back, but you don't take them over?
Sure.
And then you roll back over and then saying that should be two.
But you're not on the defense. In this situation, when they're on when they're on our leg, we are on the defense. If someone's on your leg and I leg pass you, I'm giving up 2 points. Absolutely.
I don't think it was points for Rutherford.
Why are certain techniques when you're on the defense, obviously I get when you're on the offense, right? Like a front headlock roll or something else. I get when you're on the offense. When you're on the defense, if you take a maneuver to get out of the hold that puts you on your back, you give up points. That's just how freestyle goes.
No, that to me is not points. And I've been wrestling freestyle a while.
Do you disagree with what I said about if you're in the defensive position and you do some kind of maneuver to get out of the situation and in turn you expose your back, you give up points?
I think this is what sucks about freestyle is it's highly interpretive.
Okay,
and
so
we know that, but I just think that.
So why is a leg pass giving up points then? That's totally my move.
Well, it's just different. I can't even get it. Well, there's a different. It's.
Why
it's,
is it different? It's the same thing. I'm rolling across my back to get out of trouble.
Trump, you can't ask a question and then not let the guy answer it.
Well, you're refusing to answer. You're stalling.
No, I'm not stalling.
Stalling, what I'm rolling.
Is that you have to watch the sequence take place.
Okay, well, I'm giving you a sequence which you can see in your head. Oliver rolls across his back to get out of a defensive situation. I leg pass. What's the difference?
I don't feel like Oliver was being attacked at the time that he hit the move.
Of course he was. He was on defense. The guy had his leg.
And Rutherford was not finishing.
Okay, Tommy, go to the exact same situation. You put me in Rutherford, in Oliver's situation, right? And instead of doing
the you would have scored another way.
No, let me just tell you this. Instead of doing the throw type of maneuver that he did, I leg pass. I flip over and I leg pass. Am I giving up points?
Yeah.
Okay, so why? What's the difference there?
Because I just feel like I don't know. I can't get
it's
it.
My maneuver.
I want somebody to explain this better than me, because I think there's other people that would agree with me.
Well,
but
you can't refute my general thesis, which is if I'm on defensive position and I roll across my back in order to get out of it, I give up points. That's my argument here. That's the argument I'm trying to make to you.
I feel like this throw was like an arching movement instead of like a roll.
Is that in the rule book, arching movement instead of roll?
Yeah, dude, if you can hit a lateral drop, like a step around. You can hit an over-under step around in freestyle, Ben, roll across your back, and the guy doesn't expose his, like he scrambles out of it, and they won't give the other guy points.
Sure, but again, that's an offensive maneuver. You're the one attempting the move. If someone's on your legs, you're the one trying to throw. You're the one doing the throw.
Ben, an over-under is 50-50. Okay. One guy has an over, one guy has an under. It's vice versa. It's 50-50. It's not an
offensive. But you're the one trying the throw. You're the one doing the throw.
Yeah, Ben, Jordan Oliver was trying the throw.
Okay, so I'm saying, now you're arguing that a leg pass, I shouldn't give up points.
It depends on the leg pass. It depends on how you hit it. And
do I arch or do I roll? That is not in the rule book.
This is hard to explain.
Arching versus rolling.
We got to get down and dirty. I got to grab your leg in a living room. We got to talk about this.
Okay. So my rule, my take on the rules. I've read yourself. My rules. If I leg pass, no points. No, because I did that in 2005, and you remember when there was that stupid clinch, and they got to grab your leg, and I leg passed Lee Fullhart, and then I was like stood up with his leg, and then they gave him 2 points. I'm like, golly, why did I do that? Right, but he didn't stop me at all. I had a perfect leg pass, nailed him, had his leg, and then they threw 2 points up for Lee Fullhart. So my general thesis on this situation is: if you're under attack, right? If you're being attacked, which means they're on your leg or some other, and you roll across your back in order to get out of that situation, you're giving up points. That's how I think about it.
Right. And so generally speaking, I can agree. And this is what's frustrating about freestyles. It's very interpretive. But I don't think Jordan Oliver was under attack when he hit the move.
By definition, he was, because what's McCall?
I know. Rutherford had a lifted single, but there
it
was
an offensive. Would you classify a lifted single as an offensive or defensive position?
Listen, it's like this: the car was in neutral. Ben, Zane Rutherford's car was in complete
offense or defense. Neutral is not a choice.
He was in neutral.
Oh,
they were both. They were both. Neutral.
You have to wrestle Steve Mako in overtime. Would you rather have his leg or let him have your leg up in the air?
I would rather have his leg.
Okay, it's the offensive position.
No, it's not. Just because you'd rather be in a certain position doesn't mean you're the attacking guy.
All right. I think we got to get off this topic, because not that many people are going to enjoy the nuances of wrestling rules and scoring as much as we do.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
We'll take this offline.
So we need to maybe get an exact definition. But the thing is, these refs don't know. Like, who the F are we going to ask? These rules, these refs don't understand wrestling any better than we do. Probably worse, less understanding than we do.
Right.
Who the hell can we ask? There needs to be a definition in the rule book that says if you are under attack and you roll across your back, it's points, sucka.
Yep. Okay, so let's go. 74 kilos.
All right, James Green rolls all the way to the finals. 10-0. Has a battle with Nolf. That was a really fun match. Did you check that one out?
Absolutely. Yep, I did. It was great.
That was awesome. Nolf came back strong at the end. He's going to be a problem. Maybe not this year. You know, and then he lost in the wrestle back to Chase Pammy, who now is being called Stephen Pammy. I have no idea why, because he's been Chase Pammy for the last decade and a half.
Right.
But it was all freestyle stuff. It was all like chess raps and stuff like that. So, you know, kind of what we saw happen to him last year in the junior trials. He's got to understand the freestyle stuff a little better, but he ain't far off from where he needs to be.
No, I was really impressed. I mean, as dominant as he was this year, I didn't foresee him compete. I mean, people are probably going to think I'm crazy. I just didn't see him competing this year with those top guys. Not because I don't think he ever will be, but just stylistically, I didn't think he would be able to go on the international scene and compete with someone like James Green in the freestyle rules. And he did.
Well, James Green doesn't use like the freestyle tricky stuff as much as other people. You know, like what happened to him in the third place match.
Yeah.
So
air some exposure, you know, nuances, so on and so forth.
Exactly. So Green beats Nazar Kluchitsky in the finals. Nazar wrestled awesome. He tech-falled Alec Pantaleo, who also had an awesome tournament. Hey, Michigan's going to be a problem next year, Tommy. They just got another transfer. Yeah.
They got that ODU kid that's originally from Michigan.
Yep.
That's seven All-Americans on their team, dude.
Yeah, they're going to be good. So Pantaleo makes the semis by beating Jason Chamberlain.
Pantaleo. Stop it with the Pantaleo.
Oh, I thought I said it right. Pantaleo?
Yeah.
All right. So Green sits out. Does anyone else get added to this bracket? Maybe Imar, I guess? Possibly?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
Anybody else or no?
No, but, I mean, Imar is enough fun.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, 74 kilos, main event of the night. Well, I guess first, before we get to the main event, Anthony Valencia had an awesome match in the quarters against Dieringer, and then he got pinned against Dieringer in the third place match, but he is I don't think it's that he's so much better at freestyle, which is a lot of things. I think he's cutting too much weight to make 65 and perform very well in the folk style season. That's my opinion of the matter.
Who's this?
Anthony Valencia.
Is that right?
He had a good go with Dieringer in the quarters, 11-9. I mean, it was a battle. It was a really good
match.
And then
he got third.
He got fourth. There's a misprint there. Dieringer pinned him, not vice versa.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's still a good weekend, though.
Still a good weekend, for sure. All right, Burroughs, Dake, what's your take on the main event of the evening?
Very underwhelming. I don't think anything was decided, in my opinion. I mean, my opinion of who might win and who might lose and what the implications are, and it's the same now that it was then. There was nothing new that I learned. There was nothing exciting to take away from it. And I was disappointed, but I was happy to see two guys of that caliber on the mat with each other. And okay. I was happy for Burroughs, just because. Yeah, I don't think he wrestled very well in the finals, but I was happy. You know, I think he had to row a tough road the last 7-8 months after the Olympic slide. And I wouldn't say that he's back, so to speak, compared to what he was.
Yeah,
but just think that he probably conquered some demons in the last 7 months, and I think we're going to see a different guy at the World Team Trials. And I was impressed with Dake's performance that he's competing with Burroughs, but it's just I was disappointed with. I would say that generally speaking, two of the best showmen in the sport domestically is Kyle Dake and Jordan Burroughs. And if you put them on a polygraph test and you said, "Did you leave it all out there?" they would both say, "Heck no, I didn't," and I'm disappointed about it.
Yeah, okay, so first and foremost, I think the first thing you have to address in this match is Dake was in a three-point stance from the jump, and that's something that I watched them call caution and two on earlier in the tournament, but they didn't call him for caution and two at all, which I thought would have opened the match up, because you're not supposed to be able to do that anymore either. You pretty much can't do any defensive techniques.
So I got in a very heated text battle with a number of friends.
Who? Tell me.
Oh, just a lot of friends. I'll leave them nameless. But
that's no fun.
They know wrestling. They know wrestling.
Was Mitch Clark there?
Mitch Clark was there. A lot of people were there.
Okay.
And you know, it's basically, you know, for the most part, it's 50-50. But I mean, there was two incriminating things that went on, and I thought that Dake's 3-point stance was more of a stalemate in the match, and more of a reason why things couldn't get going.
Yeah, 100%.
Then Burroughs' hands to the face. So I was on a text group of like 10 people, and I would say half of them thought the hands to the face was the biggest proponent as to why things didn't go the way they should have gone. And I thought it was Dake's 3-point stance. So, you know, they both.
I agree with you, Tommy. I think you're right. The 3-point stance shut everything down, man.
It, you know, when you get in a 3-point, there's no possible way. in my opinion, that you can be in a three-point stance and have an attacking mindset at the same time. Now, you can throw hands to the face, which is illegal, so I agree with that. Right now it's illegal.
But the three-point stance is illegal as well.
Right, but you can throw hands to the face and still use it as an offensive tactic. You can't put your hand on the mat and get as low as you can go. That is called Operation Immovable Object.
Yes.
And back in the era that I wrestled in, when there was three matches within a match and it was the most ridiculous rule set in the world, that's what you did when you were ahead with 12 seconds to go in the period.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what you did. Not because you wanted to score, but because it was the greatest way to harbor any offensive attack against you. And so I do agree that it's illegal. I think it's a big stalemate way to negate the match. And so, you know, I thought Dake wrestled well. I thought he had a nice high crotch when Burroughs.
Yeah, the high crotch was smooth. Burroughs' defense was smooth too.
Yeah, it was. So there was some good action. They were both underwhelming, but at the same time, you're watching Legends wrestle, so it was cool. I've heard some things that Burroughs should have been put on the shot clock. You know, I guess it's just an inconsequential.
I thought Burroughs was aggressive and not as aggressive as he could have been, but when Dakes got three points on the mat, man, it's hard to do so much.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to shoot on a guy that's got his hand on the mat? I mean, it's like it's tough. So
yeah, and Dake's so strong, it's like hard to front headlock him from there because then he can go underneath you. And
yeah,
then that's an issue.
Yeah, but him being strong is not a reason that it was bad. It's just because
No. But I'm saying if you're Burroughs, you don't want to be over aggressive and try to front headlock him and then he duck chair or something, right?
Right.
So you got to kind of sit back and you got to essentially wait till he comes out of that and decides to wrestle. But he was there so long.
The thing I like about the both of them is that it was an anticlimactic match in terms of what happened on the mat. But I don't think either one of them are happy with how that went down. I mean, Dake's not happy because he lost, but I think that those guys like to let it all hang out. So I just don't think we're going to see that at the trials. What do you think?
I'm going to go with Dake's going to try to shut him down until the refs say otherwise. That's his best chance of winning. Flat out it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But who knows? Maybe the refs will force him to get out of the three-point stance, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Yep.
All right, 86 kilo, all magic man, all the way. So he goes.
He looked great. He looks like he belongs physically in the weight class too.
Yeah.
And what's scary is that he's got a frame where he's going to get stronger and bigger throughout the quad, but yeah. He's already filling into that weight. It's impressive.
Hey, so how about your boy Nick Heflin? Where the freak did he come from?
I know, man. It's freaking just – if you follow him on Twitter, it's all from lifting weights.
And then also Kyle Crutchman made some noise. Dean did not look good at all.
Listen, if Pat Downey – and he didn't do this. He didn't come anywhere close. But what if Pat Downey would have beaten – would have defeated Dean and Nickel?
Nickel killed him.
He killed him. But he caught him in a –
I mean, gut wrench is a gut wrench. That's part of wrestling.
It is part of wrestling.
Yeah, that would have been something else. But, I mean, Dean didn't look great the rest of the tournament. Who did he lose to on the front side? I'm sorry. I can't remember right now. On the front side, he lost to Is that who he lost to? Heflin?
He lost to Nick Heflin.
You're right. He lost 6-3 to Heflin.
Go Bucks.
So, yeah, he was underwhelming for, you know, a lot of people were – expecting him to have better performance. So he was underwhelming. Heflin was overwhelming for where people thought he would be.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, 97 kilo. I don't know. I couldn't get into this bracket because I knew Kyle Snyder wasn't here.
I know. Same here.
Right? And so, Gadsden obviously has beaten Kyle Snyder, but him doing it again, I don't know. I don't know if I see that.
I don't see it happening, but, you know, it could happen. Yes.
But this weight is weak. Nico Reyes, who was a 174 pounder one time, takes fourth place. Callum Kleinschmidt, I'm not really sure who that is, unfortunately. Donald McNeil, don't know him. Matt Williams, don't know him. I mean, I follow wrestling, and I don't know a lot of these dudes that are placed in the top eight at this weight class.
Right.
That ain't good. Tommy, you can hop back in there.
Yeah, I got to cut a lot of weight, but we'll see.
Hey, you ready for Midlands or what?
Getting there.
Nice. All right, and at heavyweight, your old weight class, Nick Gwizdowski finally gets his first win over Zach Ray. He'll be sitting out of the May tournament. Those semis were Colt Ray over Anthony Nelson, Gwizdowski over Don Bradley. I would foresee Nick Gwizdowski making the world team. How about you?
I would agree with that. I love Zach Ray. I like Gwizdowski too. Happy to see Gwizdowski get it done. I think at heavyweight especially, you know, getting through the mini tournament, unless you're pinning dudes, it takes a toll on a 280-pound man.
Yep.
So I just think that at the heavyweight weight class especially, when you sit out, you're most likely to make the team. Here I am. I was sitting out in 08 and didn't make the Olympic team, but jeez. It's still. I'm going Gwizdowski, but you know Ray's gonna be barking up his you know what too. So,
sure. Well, I don't know. You got anything else for us?
No.
We complained about the rules enough. That was good. What else?
What are we gonna talk about next week?
Well, there's the Pan Ams coming up, so I know I'll check that out. We can talk about the Wisconsin Freestyle State Tournament, which I'll be going to.
I'm in on that.
Well, maybe we can get a guest on. What do you think?
You know, I don't think we've ever had Logan Stieber on, have we?
We have not. Let's get him.
Yeah, after Pan Ams, we'll get him on. I'll call him up.
That'll be perfect. All right, Tommy. Well, you have a good night. That was a lot of fun. And if you roll across your back, it should be 2 points.
Oh, gosh.
Under attack from a defensive
maneuver. I'll sleep on it.
Hey, if you can't answer me the question why I should give up 2 points when I leg pass, then you can't win this argument.
I need some people that listen to this podcast to have my back and tweet at me what I'm trying to say, but I can't find the words.
But they're not different. Well, they're both trying maneuvers from defensive positions, which they're rolling across their back but not getting caught. Eh. If you say Oliver shouldn't give up two, I should be able to pass a leg.
Eh.
I should. It's a fact, Jack.
All right, dude.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Tommy.
Yeah, later.
You are listening to the T-Row and Fungi Show and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had, if you know me, you know I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American in Virginia, so these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.